Good morning, and welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Virtual Sunday Service. We're affectionately known as WOOF. My name is Rosie Hamilton, and my pronouns are she and her. And it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader this morning. Whoever and wherever you are at this moment, we want you to know that you are welcome here. Regardless of your age or abilities, the color of your skin, or where you were born, regardless of whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, we are glad that you're with us this morning, all of us local to this virtual community of conscience and compassion. I encourage you to check the announcements in your order of service to see what else is happening this week and to join in our virtual coffee hour at 11:30, when we will check in with each other, share joys and sorrows, and talk about today's service. If this is your first time with us and you don't have an order of service, but would like to know more about who we are and how we stay connected during this time of social distancing, don't hesitate to get in touch with our congregational administrator. Her contact information is on the screen. And now, I light the chalice, the Unitarian Universalist symbol of our shared faith. The flame of our chalice this morning is a symbol of the warmth and brightness of our connections. The flame lights our way back together again from our separate lives and lights our way forward as a beloved community. Let us speak together. Today's speaker, Reverend Dr. Bill Sinkford, will be speaking on answering the call of love.
Our reading this morning is by the Reverend Mark Bellatini. It's entitled, When to Speak, When to Keep Silence. When the machetes of injustice tear apart the fabric of the nation and the world, I speak up. When the sunset resembles purple and orange vines entwined like lovers, I sigh in silence. When the mud of deception and trickery smear the mirror of public life, I speak up. When the moon rests like a thin slice of lemon in the sparkling glass of morning, I smile in silence. When the insecure bully me, or the greedy clutch at the common purse, I speak up. When a song lifts my soul aloft like a lark, I swoon in silence. When wars and rumors of wars destroy the hopes and lives of children, I speak up. When I am overcome by the sheer reality of a communion of life connecting every woman, man, and child on this one world earth, I speak up. When words cease, the breath moves deep and slow, and the inner and the outer are as one for a time, I wonder in deep, deep silence. Here ends our reading. When the machetes of injustice tear apart the fabric of the nation and the world, I speak up. The machetes of injustice. I can't breathe. Strong images like these are resonating powerfully these days, this year. They speak to injustices so clear, so flagrant, so unavoidable, that the call to speak up, to answer the call of love by raising your voice, by planting that stake in the ground, well, it's just a no-brainer, right? So clear. In one of my first classes in seminary, the professor gave us the assignment of reading original Unitarian and Universalist writings about slavery from the decade before the Civil War, the 1850s. And to be honest, I expected to find overwhelming sentiment in support of abolition and the extension of equal rights to the enslaved people, my people. Today, we confidently celebrate the famous Unitarian abolitionists. We love to tell the story of Theodore Parker preaching with a gun in his pulpit in case the slave patrollers should enter the church in search of former slaves who had found sanctuary there. So I expected that the Unitarian opinion would be nearly unanimous. But as I read through the denominational magazines, what I found on the yellowed pages was a real variety of opinion. Support for abolition was there, to be sure, but so were articles and letters recommending that slavery just be allowed to die out over time, made economically inefficient by machine agriculture, or even by the exhaustion of the soil from unrelieved single crop cultivation. And the difficulties of achieving abolition were emphasized in just about every letter, regardless of the opinion. And even among those favoring abolition, most did not look toward equality for the enslaved persons and the creation of a vibrant, biracial society of equals. The majority, in fact, seemed to want to send the Africans back to Africa. And there were even Unitarian voices that supported slavery itself. John Calhoun, senator from South Carolina, was a member in good standing of All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C., and attended regularly when Congress was in session. Yes, the architect of secession worshipped in a Unitarian pew. Now, I could veer off into critique of the racism that was no stranger to our Unitarian origins. Much of the money that built those beautiful white churches on those New England greens, in fact, came from the slave trade. William Ellery Channing, the father of American Unitarianism, was raised in a slave-owning family in Rhode Island. But that's not my message this morning. Tracy asked me to speak about what a faithful response to the protests on our streets should look like. And I wanted to begin by making the point that it is no simple task to discern in the midst of complicated moments, as history is being made in real time, it is no simple task to discern what love is calling us to do. If the Unitarians of the 1850s could not agree on what the right side of history was, when the choice was whether to support slavery, well, it should be no surprise that there is no one answer today either. So, rather than calling up my prophetic preacher voice, I thought a beginning of an answer would be to describe the various responses members of First Unitarian Church and the church itself have found as the uprising has unfolded and continues to be sustained. What has First Unitarian done? What have our responses looked like? Probably the place to begin to answer these questions is with the members of the church who have been taking part in the protests, both the purely peaceful demonstrations in support of the movement for Black Lives that have taken place throughout the city, and the late night protests, which the media features, that are so often declared riots and where tear gas and confrontations are frequent. Many, many more members of First have been present at the peaceful demonstrations, and I'm guessing that some of you have as well. There have also been First Church folks at the late night protests, sometimes. One of our members, a doctor, has been part of the volunteer medic team, and the Wall of Moms had First Unitarian representation as well. Dana Buell, our director of social justice, has participated in the clergy witness group some nights. Some members of the church have answered the call of love on the streets. But let me be clear, First Unitarian, as a church, has not been on the streets, and I have not urged our members to bear witness in that way. In these COVID days, many of our members, myself included, would be at real risk in the often tightly packed, an unpredictable protest environment. Our members have been on the streets, both during the day and late at night, as a result of their individual decisions. But they have been responding out of their Unitarian Universalist values and commitments. We've recorded some of these folks, and I would like to share a few of their statements with you this morning.
I've often wondered, during those pivotal moments in history where our very humanity was tested, what would I have done? Well, we find ourselves in such a moment today with the movement for Black Lives, and while the urgency and the stakes are just as real, revolutions in real time are admittedly a little more complicated than my thought exercises. The media gives us very different messages. There's sometimes a real fear for our physical safety, and we have obligations to a job or family. I have a cat to feed. In that complexity, it's my spiritual community that holds me in both support and accountability and urges me again and again past the comfort of my philosophical musings and into the messier, more vulnerable, and more needed realm of the actual work, whether that's tough conversations about white supremacy in the discussion group, or quite literally shouting through a respirator and a face shield and a cloud of tear gas that Black Lives Matter. This church community lives its principles, and it helps me to live my own. This is how we make real change, and this is our path forward. Together.
Civil rights leader Ella Baker said, "Give light and people will find the way." Many years ago, I intentionally embraced light as a spiritual cornerstone in my life. I committed to amplifying and uplifting Black voices, Black leaders, and Black lives. First Unitarian is a base of support for me because I know I am held in faith, in hope, and in love as we build together the beloved community where none of us are free until all of us are free.
When the city rose and came into the streets, I just went, and it took some reflection for me to realize that the reason why there was no question in my mind that I would be there was because of my Unitarian Universalist principles and values.
I got involved this summer because I believe so strongly that we deserve a better world, that our kids deserve a better world. And First Unitarian has helped me by being a source of love and light and resilience during this just very trying time.
And in the words of our social justice covenant, I believe that love calls us to the sacred work of seeking justice.
First Unitarian is a base of support for this work because the church and its leadership have consistently stepped up to live out the Unitarian principles to work for the beloved community. My activism in the uprisings has strengthened my commitment to First Unitarian because in the 20 years I've been participating with many wonderful, committed people and efforts to bring about greater justice. This is the first community where I have found a group of people who bring such a unique blend of humility, commitment, and tenacity. I think what is most inspiring for me is how so many of the people I've met through First Unitarian work to ensure that we are rooted in and living up to our values.
Bill's words calling us to live as if the beloved community were already here. And to me, that means that if that's true, then I can't let hatred, racism, and oppression go unnoticed. I can't sit quietly and watch it happen.
These folks understand themselves to be demonstrating as Unitarian Universalists, their witness growing out of their Unitarian Universalist identity. Beyond that individual witness, the church itself decided to become a named plaintiff in a lawsuit led by the Western States Center, a longtime partner of ours. The objective of the suit was, and is, to enjoin the federal government from introducing troops onto our streets to still our voices and inhibit our constitutionally protected rights to speech and assembly. First Unitarian's long history of public witness for justice made our participation a valued addition to the suit. Our faith has always had a spiritual center, but a civic circumference. That suit continues to move forward, although the visible presence of federal troops has been largely withdrawn. In an environment in which long-established norms of behavior have ceased to provide effective limits on the actions of those in power, I'm afraid more court decisions and legal precedents are going to be needed if we are going to reclaim our democracy. At the church, we've done no counting, but the number of folks from the church who've been out on the streets, even in daytime demonstrations, has been relatively small. I doubt a majority. The number of the late-night confrontations, much, much smaller. What about the majority of our folks? What have they been called to do? As I said, we've done no counting, but I believe the vast majority of our members support those who have been on the streets and support the movement for Black Lives. We've had that big Black Lives Matter banner hanging on 12th Avenue for years now. But the violent late-night clashes with all the tear gas and riot gear have made Portland one of the ground zeros in the struggle for the future of this nation. Much of the media, not to mention our current president, would have us focus on the violence done by mostly white protesters and the white militias, often aided and abetted by unwillingness of law enforcement to protect the protesters. To be clear, the church opposes the violence strongly. And the violence has raised real concerns among members of the congregation, some of them. The questions these folks raise are not questions of whether to support the calls for justice, but about the tactics and how downtown will ever recover from COVID and the protests. Other members of the church ask, what's the plan? The police have acted oppressively, but critical support for Black Lives Matter may in fact be eroding. What's the plan? I have resisted calls for First Unitarian to develop a position about what should happen, or a Unitarian plan to make it happen. This is not the first attempt in Portland to make policing more accountable. We even lived under Department of Justice supervision for a time. And despite all those attempts and all that effort and energy, policing in Portland, and so many other things as well, still functions to prevent Black lives and Indigenous lives and the lives of other persons of color and those struggling with mental illness. So many lives still matter so much less. But it is not First Unitarians to create the plan, nor to call the shots. The voices of impacted communities must not only be heard, but must be centered in the solution to these intractable problems. To center those most impacted, well, that would be a truly untried and a truly hopeful approach. I participate in a new group of BIPOC, that's Black, Indigenous, and Person of Color, faith leaders. The group statement reads in part, we believe that policing in America is dangerous for Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. This same unethical and unjust system makes policing in America dangerous for police also. We believe we are trapped in the same cage together, and only through collective action, community building, and restorative justice can we find a way out as a country and more importantly, as a people. We believe the only just solution to this national crisis is to defund policing as we know it in America by centering the voices of Black communities, along with the voices of our indigenous siblings and siblings of color, to envision a more just system for all, a system that actually backs the bold claims in the founding documents of the Republic. The hard work of imagining a new way, a different way, has begun. Portland United Against Hate has done great work here. Reimagine Oregon is a newer table that is hard at work. Now, there certainly are times when the church can stake out positions on issues, as we did by joining the lawsuit challenging the presence of federal troops on our streets. But the approach I encourage within the church is to bring our liberal religious values and our capacity for religious witness not only to the street, but to the various tables of discernment and locations of organizing, starting in the circles where we already move, and to try to stay open and in learning mode, to keep showing up, not insisting on our leadership, but open to and eager for relationship, committed to having the voices that have been excluded for far too long welcomed into the conversation. These next weeks will be and should be focused on the election. That's the largest stage on which the fundamental decision about our future will be taken. Will we embrace the possibility and the hope of a vibrant multicultural future, a more small d democratic practice in which greed is not seen as a virtue, science is valued, and honesty becomes an expectation, even if that is for the first time? Or will we continue down the current path toward authoritarianism, xenophobia, and self-interest, hoping to return to an imagined but never real white lost Eden? I know it's not hard to figure out my choice, and I believe our choice. So, vote, even here in bright blue Oregon. If you have not already done so, vote. It is possible that the long-standing protests on our streets may well have to make way for protests defending our basic democracy, or blend into those protests. I can argue, in fact, that they are about much the same thing. But whether it is on the streets, in your friendship circles, or in your congregational decision-making, at the heart of Unitarian Universalism, as I know it and try to live it, is a vision for the beloved community. The beloved community in which the worth and dignity of each and every person is no longer merely a dream or a promise, in which there are, in fact, no surplus people, and in which the human family, in its beautiful diversity, lives together whole and reconciled. Hold on to that vision. We will all be asked to answer the call of love in the days ahead. Of that I am sure. May our answers, our various and varied answers, keep our eyes on that prize. May our answers point toward hope, because they are grounded in love. May that be so. And amen.
As we extinguish the chalice marking the end of our time together today, let us resolve to carry within us the warm glow of the flame and all that it stands for as we make our way through the coming week and all that it brings. And may we meet again in the spirit of peace, love, compassion, and health.